This is Choni's Circle.
I'm Tamar Labicki.
I'm Rabbi Paula Rose.
And on Choni's Circle,
we are going to explore Jewish texts from the Torah through the Talmud and lots of traditional commentaries to grapple with climate change, to help us process our emotions about climate change and about this particular moment, and to help us try to make sense of the world that we find ourselves in. Today we're going to look at a text from the Talmud, from Tractate Ta'anit, which deals in large part, the tractate deals in large part with rain. And the text that we're going to look at actually includes a blessing over rain that I never knew existed until happening upon this page of Talmud. And so the Talmud asks, what is this blessing? Right? There's a reference to that there is a blessing over rain. And so the question is, like, what is actually the content of that blessing? And Rav Yehuda teaches in the name of Rav that the blessing is Modim anachnu lach Adonai Eloheinu al kol tipa v'tipa shehoradata lanu. The blessing is, we thank you, O Lord our God, for each and every drop that you have made fall for us. And Rabbi Yochanan ends the blessing with words that actually might be familiar from Psukei Dezimra, from the introductory prayers on Shabbat, which are, if our mouth were as full of song as the sea, and our tongue with singing like the multitude of its waves. And then the Talmud gives us sort of a dot, 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 and says, etc. All the way until, may your mercy not forsake us, O Lord our God, and you have not forsaken us. And I'm going to give us the dot, dot, dot that's in between, right? The Talmud is imagining that we know what's in there from the Siddur, so I'll fill that in also. Could song fill our mouth as water fills the sea? And could joy flood our tongue like countless waves? Could our lips utter praise as limitless as the sky? And could our eyes match the splendor of the sun? Could we soar with arms like eagle's wings and run with gentle grace as the swiftest deer? Never could we fully state our gratitude for 1/10,000th of the lasting love, which is your precious blessing, dearest God, granted to our ancestors and to us. From Egypt you redeemed us, from the house of bondage you delivered us, in famine you nourished us, in prosperity you sustained us. You rescued us from the sword, protected us from pestilence, and saved us from severe and lingering disease. To this day your compassion has helped us, your kindness has not forsaken us. So that's all of the dot, 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 which is quite lengthy. You can understand why the Talmud gave us the short version there. And then adds at the end of the blessing, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Baruch Rov HaHoda'ot. Blessed are you to whom many thanksgivings are offered. So the Talmud then asks, Rov HaHoda'ot Velo Kol HaHoda'ot? Many thanksgivings, but not all of the thanksgivings? And so Rava says, no, no, we should instead say God of thanksgivings. Forget about all or most. That actually the wording of the liturgy is a little bit different. And Rav Papa then splits the difference and says, since there are two different opinions, we'll say both of them. We'll say both El HaHoda'ot, God of thanksgivings, and Rov HaHoda'ot, with many thanksgivings or with abundant thanksgivings. We'll look at some commentary or the way that this gets passed down into halakha in a minute. But I just want to name that I found this blessing like really beautiful and really striking. Like, first of all, the idea that there's a blessing over rain, which fits with what I know about Jewish tradition in general, right? We have blessings for many things, including blessings over all kinds of phenomena in the natural world. And so it does feel really fitting that there should be a blessing. And this is in particular talking about a blessing either for the first rain of the season or potentially rain after drought. Though I think often they're imagining that those two things overlap, right? The first rain of the season is bringing an end to the dry season. So first of all, I just think it's like a really beautiful blessing and like beautiful to have a blessing for that. We'll talk more about the content in a minute, but I want to share why I didn't even know that this was a thing. So the Shulchan Aruch, which is the main code of Jewish law from the 1500s, and is written by Rabbi Yosef Karo in Tzfat, in the land of Israel, which is important, actually, because geography is really going to matter. he explains that if there was danger because of drought and then it rained, one blesses over rain. So this is specifically a blessing in response to the ending of drought. And then he says, what does one bless? And actually offers three different options. So if you don't have a field, right, you don't have your own land, you bless this blessing that is mentioned in the Talmud, right, that begins with gratitude for each and every drop and goes through that section from Nishmat Kol Chai, praising God for all kinds of things, including nourishing us during famine, which is, I think, an important part of the connection because of rain's role there. And then ends with blessing God, who is the God of abundant thanksgivings. We have, again, that El HaHodaot and Rov HaHodaot. And then it says if you co-own a field with another person, the blessing that you say is Hatov V'Hameitiv, which blesses God as being good and doing good. And if you own a field in your own right that you don't share with anybody else, then you bless Shehechianu, which I just think is also like really interesting that like those are all different. But I kind of love that those each speak to different aspects of what we might be celebrating when the rain falls. But he's really clear that there is an obligation to offer a blessing over the first rain. The Rama, Rabbi Moshe Isserles, who's writing in Poland, brings the Ashkenazi practice into the Shulchan Aruch. And he says that the reason that we don't have the practice of blessing the rain today, right? So he's saying we don't actually do this. And he says it's because in these lands, that is to say in the Ashkenazi world, in Northern Europe, rain is common and drought is infrequent. And so they don't have this same kind of relationship of like anticipation with the rain. One more voice from the Ashkenazi world that I think is really helpful here is that the Mishnah Brura writes a little bit later that the reason that this blessing isn't said in the Ashkenazi world in places where rain is common is Ein lahem simcha biridat hagshamim. They don't have joy with the falling of rain, right? It's just like such a normal part of the world that it doesn't bring joy, and then that is what removes the requirement from this blessing in the Ashkenazi world.
What was interesting to me is you're saying you didn't even know that a blessing over rain existed.
Yeah, I had no idea. Like, kind of embarrassingly, I had no idea that this was even out there.
What I thought was really interesting is the Nishmat Kol Chai text that you read was so beautiful. And I'm like, we should definitely do another episode on Nishmat Kol Chai because there are a lot of things in there that were like making connections for me with climate change. But also, it's kind of long. If you're out in your field, you know, tending your garden, you feel a drip of rain, you feel a lot of joy because you haven't had rain in a while. Like, to remember this whole whole thing might be difficult. I mean, you know, it was different back then. People had a lot more text in their memory, but
yeah, but I think there's something profound there, actually, right? Like, this is not like a one-liner food blessing or like the blessing that you say on seeing a rainbow or hearing thunder or any of those short, oh, I saw a thing and this is now what I say, right? There's like really more meat to it. Like it almost feels more reflective and more meditative, right? I almost imagine somebody, right, as opposed to, right, like, I'm out in the field and I felt a first drop of rain, right? I almost imagine somebody sitting by the window and like watching the rain and like reciting this whole thing as they reflect on like what a miracle it is and how grateful they are that like, okay, it looks like we're gonna have the sustenance that we need. There's something that gives it, I think, like a little bit more gravitas,
right?
That it's longer,
so it becomes a longer moment, like more of a ritual or a ceremony than, yeah, as you said, saying a quick blessing over a piece of food. When you were reading the text, I actually had the opposite thought, which was based on the first line, which is, we are grateful to you for every drop of rain. And for each and every drop is the translation that we have now, which is good because in Hebrew it's tipa v'tipa. So it's like a drop and a drop, which is almost like a very onomatopoeic, like you can hear that drop, tipa, tipa.
Yeah.
That you make fall for us. And I was thinking, like, how beautiful would it be for people to have this phrase in their mind and any time they, like, see a drop of rain? Because it says in here, like, for every single drop, right?
Yeah. And I love also, right, like, I think we often think of the rain as, like, this collective plural noun, right? It's just, like, right, like, we think of it, of all of it at once, right? And we measure it, you know, in inches or in days of rain. And I love the idea of, like, no, like, each and every drop actually matters. And each and every drop is given to us, right? It's, like, it's not just each and every drop that God caused to fall, but it's like each and every drop that God caused to fall for us, right? That somehow, right, like, each drop is like its own gift for humanity.
Yeah. And like the form of the verb that you have caused to fall, it's a little awkward in English. And it reminds me of another verb, and maybe you can remember the Hebrew for this, but which a person causes someone or something else to drink.
Mm-hmm. Lash coat, yeah.
Yeah, which is also a little awkward in English, but it does kind of speak to this idea, right? There's this idea that language kind of encodes a culture, what words we have, what words we don't have. And it's this idea of, like, generosity that's kind of encoded in the language, right?
Yeah, yeah, right. Those are both, like, a few different words that are explicitly about causing something to be given to somebody else, right? Or giving something to somebody else. And both of them really, in this case, about water, which is striking.
Yeah. So I guess for me, if we could learn something, I mean, we can learn a lot of stuff from this prayer, but it's this sense of gratitude and connection to God, but through the medium of the weather, right?
Yeah. And I think, right, as we talk about encoding not just gratitude, but generosity in language, right? We also talk a lot in Jewish tradition about the ways that we're called upon to be like God, right? And so if we see God as an entity that is intentionally and lovingly giving us individually each drop of rain that we need, what does that mean also for our relationship with the planet and for our relationship with each other in terms of, like, also cultivating that generosity and attention to need in ourselves?
And later, when the commentaries were talking about, do we say it, do we not say it? We say it maybe in the land of Israel, we don't say it in Poland. I liked how one commentary was like, well, they don't say it because they don't really feel joy from rain.
Yeah, which I feel a little bit seen, because I strive to be a person who feels joy from rain. And sometimes I do, but I don't always.
Yeah, I mean, in Seattle, when it's only light from 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. and then it starts raining after it's rained for the last 8 days, it's more difficult to cultivate that. But that's a role that prayer and blessing can have, cultivating an emotion, cultivating a gratitude.
Yeah, right. There's something interesting about the interplay here of, on the one hand, right, having the obligation to recite the blessing gives the opportunity to cultivate the feeling. And also, right, sometimes perhaps the blessing is an expression of the feeling that we're already having, right? And so it seems that the Rama and the Mishnah Berurah here are, like, are seeing it really as the latter, right? That the blessing is an expression of a feeling, and we don't have that feeling because we have a lot of rain, right? So we don't have this really profound gratitude for each drop. And so we don't say the blessing. And, like, actually, what would it mean for us to say, like, yeah, we don't necessarily have that feeling and that joy, but we aspire to that, and maybe that invites us to say the blessing as a way of trying to cultivate the feeling.
Yeah, I really like that. I should really memorize this phrase and start saying it.
Yeah, maybe the phrase and not the whole thing, because the whole thing, if we had to recite that whole thing every time it rained in Seattle, we wouldn't, I don't know that we would get a whole lot done.
Yeah. So I was also thinking about that section of, if you don't have land, you say this thing. If you are a partner with someone else owning a field, you say this other thing. If you own your field outright, you say the third thing. And it really made me think, in environmental circles and talking about climate change, there's this idea of, I'm going to get the phrase wrong, but it's like the tragedy of the commons. Mm-hmm. Where if everyone owns something, no one owns it. Like, no one takes ownership of it. And I feel like we have found some texts that dispute that logic, mm-hmm. which we may get to this session or later. But it is an idea that people play around with. If you don't feel ownership of the environment, then you feel free to trash it. And so what occurred to me is actually they give a context for different levels of ownership here.
Yeah. Right. It's not like, oh, if you don't own land, you don't say a blessing because this is not a big deal to you. Right. It's like, okay, like this, the rain might affect you in different ways. Right. If you own land or if you don't, or if you share it, but there's an acknowledgement that actually, like, this is a celebratory moment for everyone, right? And everyone has some kind of role to play in cultivating gratitude and expressing gratitude, even if it's a little bit different.
Right. So do you have any ideas of, like, why each different type of person has a different type of prayer?
I don't really. And I actually have been thinking about this a little bit. It's striking to me. In general, I think Shehecheyanu is sort of seen as a little bit of a higher order blessing than Hatov VeHametiv. The situations in which one traditionally says Shehecheyanu are more limited. I think that's actually sort of the opposite in our lived experience very often. I think people really like Shehecheyanu and look for a lot of opportunities to use it. But traditionally speaking, it is more limited. And so it's not shocking to me that it would be like, okay, somebody who completely owns their land outright says Shehecheyanu, while somebody who has partial ownership says Hatov VeHametiv, which is still a blessing, right, acknowledging something good that has happened, but maybe something a little bit less momentous. So that's not shocking to me. What's sort of most surprising to me is actually, like, that this first blessing, the one that we get from the Talmud, the really long one, is limited to people who don't own land. Right? In some ways, right, a blessing that is unique to the circumstance. Right? Shehecheyanu and Hatov VeHametiv, you can use for lots of things. And this particular blessing, right, is only for rain after drought. And so, like, what does it mean that actually not everybody says it and that it's only for people who don't own land?
Right. And it's like, as you said, when you say a longer blessing, you're kind of concentrating more, you're setting aside more time. It almost seems more meaningful to say the longer prayer. And if you own the land, you're saying a shorter prayer.
Yeah. I mean, and maybe it goes back to, right, maybe there's a temptation into cynicism. If you don't own a field and the rain comes, you're like, okay, well, I guess, like, maybe there's now going to be enough food for, you know, society as a whole, myself included, this season. But, like, this doesn't actually affect me directly because I don't actually really care that much. This isn't going to make a really big difference in my financial bottom line this year.
Right.
And there might even be some resentment. Oh, this really benefits other people, right? Those people who have fields are now going to do really well, right? But this is not going to affect me and whatever my source of income might be. And maybe that's sort of actually the pushing of, like, no, like, actually, like, rain matters for everyone, right? And even if it's going to affect you and your financial situation less directly,
right?
Maybe it's almost like a correction. To say, no, you might think that this is not important to you, but let me give you a really long blessing to say to cultivate that gratitude.
Right, which I think if we were to put probably most people who listen to our podcast into one of these categories, yeah, you might own the land under your house, maybe, but you don't have that direct connection with the land itself in the same way you would if you're a farmer who yeah. owns the land and depends on the rain. So we're really in the first class
yeah.
of people.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think unless you're a farmer, even if you have a garden, right, a garden and a field are not the same. I think that's right. I think as urban dwellers, we really are in that first category, which means we have to work a little harder, right? I think that that's actually what this blessing is inviting us to do.
I'm Rabbi Paula Rose, the Associate Rabbi of Congregation Beth Shalom in Seattle. This podcast is a project of Congregation Beth Shalom and Ahavat Ve'avodat Adama, our community's environmental group.
Choni's Circle was recorded in Seattle, Washington at Full Track Productions. It was produced by Tamara Labicki and Dave Dintenfass.
With original music by Ella Labicki Feldman.
Thanks for listening and learning with us.